It's the tip of the spear in the epic battle to defend the United States of America. The National Security Hour exposes the wolves in sheep's clothing and their nefarious plots to undermine and destroy U.S. national security.
Welcome, everyone. This is Colonel Rhett John. Colonel Rhett John, the National Security Hour for America Out Loud News Network. And I just have a wonderful guest, a friend, a colleague, the Honorable Mark Fincham, who has just been a heroic freedom fighter in Arizona. And it pains me to say this. I have family connections to Arizona, and just seeing what's happened in Arizona over the last few years, it's just been painful. Mark has just been incredible. So, Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Colonel Mills. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Oh, thank you. You've been a wonderful fighter for Arizona, for the nation as a whole. I always like to have first-time guests. Just go ahead and tell the long story, because even when I think I know somebody well, I always find out something in their introduction every single time that I didn't know about their background. So I love to hear people just kind of tell their story. And so, sir, Mark, please tell us how your journey to becoming a Mark Fincham today.
Oh, gosh. Well, it all started 67 years ago. And God has blessed me richly with a life experience that I think many people would envy. Lived both a rural and city life growing up, you know, sometime on the farm, sometime in the city, then sometime back on the farms, and, you know, kind of back and forth. Always have been a farm kid, though, a 4-H FFA kid. Graduated from high school in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and went to enlist. I graduated June of 1975, went down to the post office to fill out my draft paperwork. And they said, you're one of the fortunate few. I said, what's that? And they said, you're exempt. What? Yeah, you're exempt. So I went to the Marine Corps recruiting station and said, I'd like to enlist. I've got a particular interest in being a helicopter pilot because I've already got my ground school done in high school. And the recruiting officer said, well, young man, tell you what, come back in about 6 months. We don't need you. I'm like, wait a minute. I thought you were a recruiting officer. Well, yeah, right now we're working on cycling people out, not bringing people in. Okay, well, I need a job. He said, well, you might try something else for a while. So not long after that, I was hired by the Kalamazoo Fire Department, did a couple of years as a firefighter, was a level 3 paramedic. In Michigan, that's as high as it gets in the paramedic world, other than ACLS certified, which is the same certification that emergency room physicians have for cardiac cases and all that. So had a wonderful career with the city of Kalamazoo, and then was recruited to shift gears into what they call a public safety officer, law enforcement, firefighter, and paramedic. So I did 18 years with the primary focus on law enforcement, and retired in 1999, January 9th of 1999. And during that time, lived a rancher's life outside of Kalamazoo in Barry County, the same county that Sheriff Darleaf, who is at the center of controversy around the country, standing up for his constituents. He would have been my sheriff if I still lived there, but I had a small ranch out there, raised horses, cows, sheep, et cetera, et cetera. It's something very cathartic about raking hay when you've been working midnights in the ghetto chasing bad guys. Retired in 1999, said I've had enough of the snow and the cold. Moved to Tucson, Arizona. Went to work for American Airlines. Lasted there about a year and a half. I couldn't take a desk job. The question every 15 minutes was, what's the cheapest fare from here to there? And it was back in the heyday of the airlines. They were really selling, you know, packing in planes and really getting people accustomed to air travel. Left American Airlines, went to work for Intuit, and became their senior manager in charge of the small business division. So I did a lot of travel from Arizona to India. and left, did about 7 years with Intuit. So you're kind of getting the impression it's small business, rancher, rural, city, Fortune 500 guy. And then I decided that I wanted to work for myself, got my real estate license, and just stayed home for a while. And then the door came, the day came a knocking where somebody said, we'd like you to run for the House of Representatives. We're going to have an opening, and we'd like to have somebody like yourself who's not afraid, because I've taken public stands on things before and was helpful in trying to prevent Medicaid expansion in Arizona. And, you know, door knocked and took petitions around and was, you know, a participant in the political process, but never really a candidate. Until I ran for the Oro Valley Town Council and had my ass handed to me, only got 500 votes, and that wasn't even close. So, but I decided, sure, if you want to have me represent you, let's talk about it. And the next thing you know, I'm on the backside of 8 years, one of the most conservative members of the House of Representatives in Arizona, and ran for. I was termed out, and I told my constituents, you better find somebody to replace me, because I'm not going to play this game of switching offices from the House to Senate. You can do that. We have term limits, 4 2-year term limits in Arizona. And I said, you know, I think it's time for me to leave the legislature. And then lo and behold, November 30th, 2020, at the time, I was the chairman of the Federal Relations Committee in the House of Representatives and responded with a couple of my colleagues to calls by the people of Maricopa County and Arizona at large to look into the 2020 general election because of all of the observations of irregularities. We held about a 10.5-hour hearing that really got some people upset. Governor Doug Ducey was incensed that we did not go through normal order. And it's like, well, first of all, with all due respect, Governor, you didn't hire me. The people did. They hired me to do some very specific things, to seek truth, to fashion public policy, and to hold people accountable. And that's what we aim to do. Well, little did we know, and I have to give credit to Senator Sonny Borelli, we call him Gunny Borelli, 21-year gunnery sergeant in the Marine Corps, and then Representative Leo Biasucci, who is now the House Majority Leader in the current House of Representatives. They came alongside me and said, we need to have a joint ad hoc committee. Our phones are blowing up and emails over irregularities in the election, particularly from Pima and Maricopa County. So, you know you're over the target when the media immediately pounces on you and tries to treat you as the Christians thrown to the lions. And, you know, I've been in politics long enough to understand that when you're over the target and you start taking that kind of flack, they're terrified of what you're going to find. And 15 days later, we collected enough, I believe, probable cause to 15 days later, the Senate Judiciary Committee issued subpoenas against the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors for their management of the 2020 election.
And just then, what I want everybody to understand. So at that time in the Maricopa County Board, they were Republican, correct?
That's alleged, yes. Four Republicans, four Republicans and one Democrat. But you also had three Trump haters besides the Democrat sitting on the board. And they were openly, vociferously anti-America First, anti-Trump. And it's fairly common knowledge. Anybody in the intel community has probably heard of InQtel and the deeply embedded CIA operatives at the Arizona State University. And so it's no surprise to me that this would be the center of controversy. What we didn't anticipate is what we would find in the fullness of time. So during that period of time, I was in the process of terming out as the House of Representatives. I saw an opportunity to try to repair the damage that had been done by some of these county officials. So I ran for Secretary of State. President Trump endorsed me for that position. And I allegedly lost by 120,000 votes. Of course, that's not taking into account the 390,000 fictitious votes that we've been able to find in the system. So they just really didn't want me, Kerry, and Abe Hamaday, especially Abe, in office. Now, Abe allegedly lost by 230 votes, I think. But there were still 6,000 provisional votes that hadn't been counted when the election was called. Seems kind of odd to me, especially since the provisional votes would have been primarily Republican and a Democrat seized the office. Now, most of the people in Arizona believe that we have an illegitimate administration in place, a governor that oversaw her own upset election. People have probably heard Carrie Lake speak on a number of times, 81 million my ass. Well, that's pretty much it. And then, of course, my position, I was told by a number of people within the election community, election law community, they were never going to let you win that race. What do you mean they? The power brokers. How so? Well, because you would have had direct access to the codes and you'd have been able to put an end to all the shenanigans.
Who is they in Arizona? Who is they?
They are the power brokers. I mean, it doesn't take a lot of imagination when you have longtime, well-heeled political types like Jan Brewer come out and endorse an obvious uniparty candidate. When you have individuals who are the big money people, the sports team owners and all that, they endorse the uniparty guy.
Jan Brewer was who was Jan Brewer? Was she
was governor of the state of Arizona. She's the one who famously was wagging her finger on the tarmac at Barack Obama. And it was a misrepresentation of the finger wag. It wasn't anything close to what it was attributed to. It was a totally different topic, but it was a great photo op. Anyhow, I ran for Secretary of State, and I'm not there. So now I am running for, again, a policy position, and that would be for state Senate. There's only one way to fix this thing, and it's from the inside out. And, the administrative state can only do what the legislature permits it to do. Now, we do have a problem with the governor the occupant of the ninth floor. There is currently a recall effort against the governor, secretary of state, and the attorney general. And I have every reason to believe that it will be successful because these are probably the three most unpopular people in the history of the state of Arizona. So to assume that they won office legitimately couldn't be any further from the truth. But in the fullness of time and in the interest of advancing the national security part of this conversation, we have discovered a number of things that affected not only the 2020 election, but also the 2022 election, and will likely, if not stopped, or at least blocked or interfered with, will affect the 2024 election. And they have everything to do with what I'm going to call the new border, and that's the cybersecurity border. We have the physical border, which everybody watches the tens of thousands of people pouring across there every day. Then you have the cybersecurity border, which we know that our adversaries want to take our grid down. So that's a daily, we're already at war. That's mm-hmm. a daily fight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, they have direct access to our election systems. As much as the propaganda media like New York Times and WAPO want to say, oh, no, it's the most secure election ever. Chris Krebs, by the way, is a liar and probably should be prosecuted for crimes against the people of the United States.
Oh yeah. No, he made
the claim that we had the most secure election ever days after the election with absolutely no proof. Well, hey, Chris, we now have proof in hand that the software that was used for those elections had been tampered with, and the God keys on the servers allowed access to any user to go in and alter an election.
Yeah.
So there's the big message to your audience.
Yeah, absolutely. And Chris Krebs was, I really have a lot of problems. I would like to see Chris Krebs prosecuted. Right now, there's a entity in the DC swamp called the Cipher Brief.
Right.
And if you want a roster of everybody who's a swamp monster uniparty member, I mean, you got Michael Hayden on there, you got John Brennan on there, and you got
Alex Santos.
Yeah. And you got Chris Krebs. Yeah. And what really he should have said, because in my detailed analysis, and I having come recently from government, I knew pretty well what, I mean, he said most secure election ever, yet when he was out of office in February, he said, I didn't have the people, programs, or resources to determine whether it was a fair election or not. Well, which is it?
Yeah, which time did you lie?
Yeah. Which time did you lie, Chris?
Have you stopped beating your wife yet?
That should have been his response in November, because I knew the state of affairs at DHS, CISA, and he should have just said, I don't have the program or resources to give you an answer on that question.
Well, and here's the big tell. Why would rational people spend hundreds of millions of dollars to prevent the comparison of ballot count with machine count?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they know damn well what's going to be found.
Yeah.
Why would they spend hundreds of millions of dollars preventing an audit of the software itself, claiming it's proprietary? Well, there's an easy way to solve that. You go into a room with a special master and you lock everybody out and you determine whether there is nefarious software on those machines. Now, we have found that. In fact, if folks want to look at our Supreme Court filing, we did have a filing that went to the Supreme Court, Carrie Lake and Mark Fincham v. Adrian Fontes et al. We were denied cert a couple of weeks ago. Not sure what grounds, but we do have a recovery plan. We were hoping that at the very least we would see a remand back to the trial court. But we were able to advise the court that Maricopa County just outright lied to them, said that the software that was in use was certified when in fact it was not. It had been altered, adulterated, and created a Frankenstein version of the software that, quite frankly, was capable of flipping votes.
Yeah. Hey, Mark, we're going to have to take a break, a real quick break here, and we'll be right back. This is incredible. Thank you so much, everyone. This is Colonel Rhett John. This is the National Security Hour on America Out Loud News Network, and have incredible special guest, the Honorable Mark Fincham, and we'll be right back.
58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Joint Health and Mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutloud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutloud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use code FIXRX because it works.
We're back. This is Colonel Rhett John, the National Security Hour, and having a great conversation with the Honorable Mark Fincham. Mark, I just you said a couple of things in your opening bio that I felt were fascinating. I mean, so you tried to join the military right after they ended the draft and conscription. So you were swimming upstream trying to get in when it was totally chaotic. What you mentioned, your wonderful colleague Sonny Borelli, one of them. And I didn't realize you also mentioned the ASU InQtel connection. I didn't realize. I had to deal with InQtel a number of times, which I believe is no longer an appropriated fund activity. They've been spun off. You can do that with Title 50 started activities. But I didn't realize they had a footprint at Arizona State. So you're saying...
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Huge.
Okay.
Huge. Michael Crow.
Yeah.
President of the ASU. Look that guy up.
Okay. This is... What... You know, it had been Goldwater country. Now, we all... kind of, mm-hmm. I was one of the guys who said hooray McCain in 2008, and I realized the guy was just he was something else. I mean, where you mentioned Jan Brewer, where and Ducey, where did this just cabal of appeasers and cavers to the where did they come from? Why did they think it's better to just, I mean, were they getting paid off? What happened?
Well, it's like any infiltration. You had individuals who were very carefully placed into very important positions. I mean, you know, Doug Ducey started off as a beer truck driver for, I think, Cindy McCain's family. They owned one of the liquor distributors. And... you know, so you got that, and then all of a sudden he's a CEO, reports being a CEO of an ice cream shop. And then you've got John McCain, and I'm not going to bash Mr. McCain. I don't believe in bashing the dead, but you know, there's a bit of a history there. People want to understand how Arizona moved towards a Democrat registered as a Republican state. Which we do have quite a problem with now. John McCain, when he moved here from California, was a Democrat. Now, I don't say that to vilify anybody. I mean, if you have an epiphany that the Republican or that the Democrat Party, and this probably isn't true today, but if then you had an epiphany that the Republican Party was perhaps more emblematic of your worldview and dealt more with civil rights than the party that represented the KKK, and I'm talking about the Democrats. And some people would say that that's a provocative thing for me to say. Not at all. Look at the history of the Democrat Party. That's why they're so obsessed with rewriting history and tearing history down, because they can't look in the mirror and face themselves. But when you have somebody that comes here from California, is a Democrat, decides he wants to take on the big dog, and that's Barry Goldwater. As I get it, Mr. McCain had his ass handed to him by Mr. Goldwater. And then over time, McCain realized that he would have to be a Republican if he's going to win public office in Arizona, so he switched parties. And, you know, I'm sure that he has done a lot of, or did a lot of good things, especially in the veteran community. He is still revered by many veterans for pushing the VA along to get better service. Now, I know a lot of veterans because of my involvement in the veteran community and throughout the state. People do revere Mr. McCain, and for probably that's the thing that he did that most saved his reputation. But now today, even the VA is 10 times better than it was. So perhaps public policy moves were good. But you start looking at some of the individuals who have been in Arizona politics, and I never really believed much in this idea of power brokers inserting people into place, but until 2016. And then in 2020. And then in 2022. And now it's as though the mask has been totally ripped off that crowd. And you see individuals who, they vote with Democrats all the time. In fact, the fellow that I'm taking on right now in Legislative District 1, a state senator by the name of Ken Bennett, he routinely votes with Democrats, and the people of the district, they've just had it with the guy. Mm-hmm. He's a longtime resident. You know, he's got deep family roots there, and they're like, no, we're done. We're done. We want somebody that represents our values. So I think that what's happened is you have this insurgency, and I do believe it's an insurgency because we have got many Democrats now in the state who are just full-on Marxist. You have, for example, our Secretary of State and even our governor, but they sing Che Guevara's praises. But then you've also got Republicans who are, they're afraid of boldly standing for their oath of office. Now, I was asked this question the other day about where do you stand on Arizona's ban on abortion, which they claim it was a territorial law, but it was actually reiterated in the 1970s. And I said, well, my oath of office is not to any person. It's to the Constitution of the United States to protect it against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That means the entire Constitution. I don't get to pick and choose what part. It's the whole document. And in the preamble of the Constitution, it refers to ourselves and our posterity. Posterity in Black's Law and many of the definitions. And by the way, it's a capital P. That's important to know. That's our children's children's children. Those who have not even been dreamed of yet. We are here to protect their access to what we have experienced. So that was kind of an earth-shattering thing for people to hear come out of a political figure's mouth. But it's like, look, I took an oath, and there's no expiration date on that oath. I'm not relieved of duty yet. So that means that I still have to stand for the entire document. Well, we don't have that anymore. And even in the Republican Party, we have cells of that, if you will, people who really do bear true faith and allegiance. But it's sad to see that this insurgency now has really been very effective at taking out good people that have been in office and replacing them with people who are more interested in sitting in the big chair with the big suspenders and going to parties. That's not me. Mm. I'm at the other end of the spectrum. I'm a doer, not a talker.
What is Legislative District 1, just for everybody's orientation, where you're going to be running against Ken Bennett, who is
that is the county directly north of Maricopa County, and it includes Prescott.
Okay.
P-R-E-S-C-O-T-T, spelled Prescott, but it's pronounced Prescott. That was the territorial capital of Arizona when Arizona was sliced off of the New Mexico territory to become a state.
Okay.
And through a move, which probably made a lot of sense, when we became a state, they moved the capital to Phoenix because it's downhill. Water will flow downhill. And if you're trying to build a city and build an environment, in the desert, you got to have water. So it was a wise move. But now, as you said earlier, it would have been nice to break Maricopa County up into three, maybe four or five different counties, because there is too much power that's concentrated in one place. Mm-hmm. But I encourage rural voters. There's an opportunity there to be more powerful than you realize. Mm-hmm. That when you have 95, 98, 97, 100% voter turnout in the rural community. That offsets 53% turnout in the metropolitan areas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's more numbers there, but there is a way to mathematically overshadow the big gorilla in the middle of the room.
Yeah.
So does that totally, is that Yavapai County? Is that totally correspond, or are they different lines?
Yavapai County and just a little sliver of Coconino County. But okay. So if you were to, for grins and giggles, it's basically New River all the way up to Sedona, all the way over past Ash Fork, down to Skull Valley, down into Wickenburg, across. I mean, it is a massive piece of land.
Okay.
There's a lot of driving.
Is there a is that where Cottonwood is at? Is that in your district?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Cottonwood, yeah. Camp Verde.
Okay. Yeah. I got Lisa DuVernay is on the city council there, and they've been able to essentially stiff arm a recall. But it was her and some others stood up to this crazy drag show that was going on, not for the children, but for the benefits of the perverts who like to dress up like that. And she's been taking fire from an Arabella funded group.
Like, good for her.
Oh yeah, she's doing really well.
I need to introduce myself to her then, because this is the insanity that has gripped not just Arizona, not just the metropolitan areas, but rural communities. Yeah. And it is, you know, people are more concerned about being shamed than they are about showing courage.
Oh yeah.
And in 67 years, I don't give a bloody damn anymore about what people think of me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I am going to stand up for my constituents. And for those who want to alter our society, I got a great solution for you. Move to where what you're doing is already accepted.
Yeah. Oh, that's just a shame. Well, that's good. I'll connect you both. But yeah, it is just the, when she mentioned the group's name, I looked it up and within 30 seconds had found that their primary funding was Arabella, which is dark money. And that all, what does that all trace to? This traces to McCain-Feingold, which campaign finance reform. What a good idea. Well, this created the Native American reservation as a hub of money laundering, didn't do anything for the population of that Native American sovereign tribe. It just created a money laundering operation. And, there again, who was it? McCain. And is Cindy McCain an appointee under the Biden administration?
I have no idea, but I do remember that there was a photograph that many Arizonans found utterly repugnant of Cindy McCain, Jeff Flake, the disgraced U.S. Senator, and Doug Ducey in masks at the Biden inauguration, essentially mocking, I think, President Trump and the people of Arizona. And I know there's a lot of people that took great offense to that picture. But it's interesting you bring up the Feingold-McCain bill. All that did, that wasn't about campaign finance reform. What that was is about hiding the people who, it's funny about the federal government. If you want to know what something's going to do, look at the title, and it's going to do exactly the opposite. Like the Affordable Care Act. Right. It was an act that had nothing to do with affordable care.
That
campaign finance reform. No, all that did was drive the deep, dark money down underground, and now it gets spread around. I would much prefer to see individuals outed. No, none of these independent expenditure committees. If you're going to give to a campaign's benefit, be bold enough to stand up and show your skin. that means that people like Paul Singer that want to put billions of dollars behind individuals who don't give a shit about the United States, but want to line their pockets, that means that those people are going to be revealed. And right now they're not, until, of course, after the fact. So don't give me this crap about, oh, we're going to try and clean up elections with campaign finance reform. Well, let me know how that goes, because none of us believe you. Yeah, it's not happening.
Yeah, this set us on the pathway to where we're at today. So, yep. The Helping Americans Vote Act. Americans couldn't vote before HAVA, obviously. So,
yeah, and I think one of the opportunities there, again, it was asked by some folks in Prescott Valley. How do we take back control of education at the state level, at the county level, at the local level? I said, well, the number one thing you do is you tell the federal government, no, thank you, we don't want your money.
Yeah, yeah.
If you reject federal funding, you don't have to abide by federal regulations. The Department of Education was put in place by the peanut farmer that found his way to the White House.
Yeah.
And many people don't understand that was put in place for continuity of education for federal employees that were shipped all over the place, military.
Hey, Mark, we're going to take a break here. Let's pick this up right after the break.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Mark. Everyone, this is the National Security Hour, and we'll be right back with the final segment with the Honorable Mark Fincham.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutLoud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The wellness company is offering the Signature Series Spike Support Formula. The wellness company supports this formula because it's designed to remove spike protein from the body. The spike support formula is designed to help the body catabolize the spike protein, begin to remove it through its natural mechanisms. So go to twc.health and check out the spike support formula. You can use our promotional codes or go through our banner bars on our site to get promotional codes and discounts on your purchase.
The Wellness Company shares your values and fights for medical freedom. They put patients before profits and follow medical science, not political science like doctors on the left. Their chief medical board, which includes Dr. Peter McCullough, are the makers of the incredible American-made high-quality spike formula. If you worry about spike proteins, go to twc.health and use promo code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount. Once again, that's twc.health, promo code OUTLOUD.
Many voices, one freedom, united in the First Amendment. Our goal is to herald the voice of genuine liberty at AmericaOutLoud.news, a place where you'll find the naked truth expressed with a patriotic heart. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
We're back. This is Colonel Rhett John, National Security Hour, with the Honorable Mark Fincham. And Mark, when we left, we were talking about, and I think this is an important concept, how the federal government hooks in It takes in a dollar, it wastes about 30% of it, and then it gives back 0.7 of a dollar. Normally, that's called going out of business. And there's no reason that a government, a county, state government, has to take federal money. And the education department is one of the worst examples of fraud, waste, and abuse.
It's even worse than that. In fact, the metaphor that I used talking to some school board folks that were like, well, how can we take back control of education? And I said, well, what's the cheapest part about getting a dog? And they looked at me like I'd lost my mind. I said, well, no, seriously, what's the cheapest part about getting a dog? Well, probably getting the dog. Here ends the lesson number one. The cost of compliance, once you take federal money, exceeds the value of the money that you receive. Mm-hmm. Why would you do that to yourself? Oh, well, we need this program. No, no, no. You need or you want? Because what you're doing is you're implementing a program on borrowed money. That borrowed money is going to go away someday, and you have now just exposed your principles, because you are an agent of the people. You've just exposed your principle to ongoing financial liability that really doesn't serve them, doesn't serve their interests, but maybe it serves your interest because, oh, well, I got this program or that program started, and look at all the good things we're doing. Like, you know, we're engaged in gender bending, and we're able to make sure that children have an opportunity to have a permanent sex change that will probably damage them psychologically for the rest of their lives. But hey, the federal government's paying for it. We should empower people to do that. It is utterly absurd. And elected officials who engage in that kind of behavior need thrown out of office. And we need to get back to the founding principles of our nation, and that's fiscal responsibility, that is limited government, that is respect for the Constitution, isn't respect for civil rights. Because right now, I'm looking around and I'm not seeing a whole lot of respect for civil rights at many levels.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm curious, have you ever heard of this association called the National Association of Counties?
Yeah. So anytime, here's one for you. Anytime you see National Association of fill in the blank, you should run like a frightened school child. These organizations exist supposedly to advocate for some government position. The county, National Association of Secretaries of State, the National Association of Governors of, like I say, fill in the blank. So let me get this straight. We elected you to occupy an office to advocate on behalf of us, and now you're going to abdicate your responsibility to paid lobbyists who don't really represent the interests of your people. You've just now been insulated because the association is representing your interests so that you have plausible deniability to say, well, I don't completely agree with them, but yes, I am a member. Mm-hmm. The whole thing is an incestuous bird nest filled with dung. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things, National Association of Counties. It's like the Arizona Association of Counties. What is it? Arizona Associations of Cities and Towns. I would expect that if you have an elected official who is a town council member, they would have my phone as their state senator on speed dial. In fact, if people look me up, everywhere you see my name, you will see my phone number. And yes, I get calls at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And I answer them. That's not encouragement to your listeners to do that. Just, it does happen. So I would expect that elected officials would have direct interaction with those that are that work for them. And I believe, quite frankly, that the county is the seat of government, not Washington, D.C. Now, I'm sure that Creepy Joe would disagree because he wants to be an all-powerful emperor. But no, that's not how this works. In fact, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, in a moment of clarity, I didn't always agree with the woman, but she did have some pretty good statements in her lifetime as a Supreme Court justice. In the Arizona legislature versus IRDC case, she said, and this is paraphrased, but it's pretty accurate, the people, in the end, are the ultimate legislature. If the people decide to do something, and in Arizona we have a referral process where you can refer something to the ballot, or you can have a referendum where the people bring something directly to the ballot. Now, that's kind of a dangerous thing, because once it's brought into law in Arizona that way, good luck getting rid of it, because it is voter protected. That means you have to have, I think, 2/3 of the people have to vote to end it. Our biggest problem with that is somebody gets a great idea at the kitchen table. They sketch it out. They put it on the ballot. People think, oh, that's a great idea. Except there are no hearings. There's no fiscal note. There's no examination of the merits of the policy. And suddenly you get 20 years out from the passage of something, and it's like, what the heck have we done? But now you have this whole industry that's been built up to support whatever that policy move is. Mm-hmm. And it is the, quite frankly, it is the bastardization of the Republican form of government. And I think honestly, I'll be crucified for saying this out loud, but so be it. The referendum is not a Republican form of government. There's a reason that our Constitution said that we would be guaranteed a Republican form of government. Now, that is at the federal level. Unfortunately, the state governments didn't learn that lesson, and now they're suffering the consequences.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, when does the the primary come up where you're running against Bennett?
Our primary is July 30th.
Okay.
So we're inside the 91-day marker.
Okay.
And because Yavapai County is one of the most Republican counties in the state, let's see, I think it's 87% Republican. We have 68,000, is that right? 68,000? Yeah. Registered Republicans and something on the order of 15 or 20,000 Democrats. Quite a few independents as well, but the independents have a tendency to vote on the conservative side of things. Because of that makeup, our primary really is the general. Whoever wins the primary wins the whole ball of wax.
Okay.
So, yeah, July 30th, this is going to be over, and we will see how the people of Yavapai County want to be represented.
Okay. Well, no, I pray for you. That I'd love to see you in there. Bennett was – I came out – you and I saw each other with the joint committee on election integrity, Borelli.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, Rogers, that was like February of last year, I think it was.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, Bennett was not impressive. I would love to see you get back in and really be able to make changes. And then when does the, where is the recall effort in Arizona? What's the status of that?
I think it, I just saw an update yesterday. I think they started it in January, and it's got to be wrapping up. But they need to get 635,000 signatures, I think.
Okay.
Before they can get it on the ballot, so they're if they don't have their signatures, they're running out of time. But I think if they do get their signatures, it is going to create a significant groundswell of support when people see that there's an opportunity to set affairs straight. Okay. Now, of course, we have to remember that the same machine that put these people in place is going to be running the elections. And, you know, to go back and revisit that for just a moment on the cybersecurity, on the election security front, election machines, the tabulation machines, are an existential threat to the republic. I can be no more clear than that. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan of paper ballots counted by hand mm-hmm. at the precinct level on election day. The idea that you would count votes in advance of election day is antithetical to fair play, because somebody is going to get that information in their hands and they're going to know how to manipulate the election, knowing just how many votes do they have to produce.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Think Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. You know, the truckload of ballots that had to be sent in from, I think it was New York.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the pallets of ballots that were sent to Georgia, 500,000 ballots, paid for, by the way, by Dominion, in their runoff election.
Mm-hmm.
If you know in advance what the numbers are like, that's like post-betting on a horse race. You know, I remember the movie The Sting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They were getting everybody to believe that the race was going on when the race had already concluded 5 minutes earlier.
Right, right.
Okay. That's how this works. So if we move to, in the very least, an absolute right of a county to conduct a paper ballot comparison, physical ballot comparison, with the machine count, that is one step, giant step, in the direction of election security and transparency, by the way. You know, Mark Cook has done a great job with the Hand Count Roadshow. If people want to go online and take a look at that, Hand Count Roadshow, I think it's .org, I believe. There's a demonstration of what that looks like,
mm-hmm.
doing a hand count. With digital overwatch, you can see every ballot. You can see as the caller calls out the ballot, who got what vote. It's done in the open, in bright light,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to within a machine that nobody gets to see or validate the software.
Yeah, this sounds like the Taiwan elections. I was in Taiwan in January, and it's very visible, very transparent. Now, we just had there was a press conference in D.C., and I think this was such an important finding. The Taiwanese did a kind of a after the election, what had happened since the election, but they released some findings from before and during the election. One of the things they brought up was they called them the role of the collaborators, and I thought this was fascinating. I'm not making any accusations, but this is from one of the countries that is considered to have the most ethical, honest, transparent, and accountable election is Taiwan. And they said there was clearly Chinese attempt at manipulation via cyber methods into the machine environment, but that's why they do paper only, very mm-hmm. transparent counting. The votes are actually go up two levels. They kind of have a precinct like ours. They have a county like ours. There's an interim in between that, but the numbers don't get entered electronically until like two levels up from what we would normally call a precinct in America. And everybody knows the numbers by that time. So there's no way somebody can go in by the time it gets into a network. The numbers are already known and established. So that's good. But they said the role of the collaborator, that means an insider. That means, and this is, hey, from years of my experience in national security work, you always want an insider. And that's a great finding from the real world, which means what? Mm-hmm. Which means what? Maricopa. You always need an insider to help manipulate, put the finger on the scale, and Fulton and Philadelphia. So
that would be the employee of Dominion who went in and entered the software from the back end, altered the software using the God keys, and created new machine behavior settings, MBS. That's why the machine gave a warning during operations in 2020 and 2022. This is the thing that Ben Cotton from Cypher figured out. This is the reason that the machine tattled on itself.
Yeah. Oh.
It said, well, you know, MBS settings are a big error warning, are incorrect, unexpected error.
Yeah.
Well, at that point, you would think that the elections officials would say, oh, wait, we have an unexpected error. No, just plow on through.
Yeah.
It'll be okay.
Yeah, this
It'll
is
be
bad.
Okay.
Hey, Mark, I think, unfortunately, we're at the end of this. I mean, I'm going to definitely have to have you back on, but this has just been a great conversation. Got 30 seconds. Tell everybody, how do they get to you, Mark? What's your social media coordinates?
Sure.
Go ahead.
True Social and Twitter is at Real Mark Fincham. And I think that is probably, I don't play much out on Facebook. I got a team that helps me out there. But if you look for Mark Fincham, just look for the guy with the cowboy hat. Be kind of easy to spot. If folks want to get a hold of me, if they've got questions, one thing they could do is write an email to me at mark@votefincham.com. That's VOTEFINCHE, like Edward, M like Mary.com. And of course, if folks want to make a contribution to my campaign, votefincham.com, click on the donate button. We are engaged in a very serious war when it comes to political, and I'd use that in the political vernacular. We have people in office that should not be in office, and we need to replace them. They're kind of like diapers, as Mark Twain once said.
Mark, thank you so much. This has been absolutely wonderful. Going to have you back.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Mark. Everyone, this has been Colonel Rhett John, the National Security Hour, with the incredible, the Honorable Mark Fincham, that we hope to see back in office very, very shortly.